Is this the sign that I should get back to work?
You were saying?
But basically, the effects that I could see in the students that I was teaching in high school, you know, in the students that I saw in these villages, it was just an amazing thing. The country was slowly becoming literate. And these were all students who perhaps would not use their educations later, but in many, many cases they did. I could see them. You know, the village boys, especially the boys, because it's a male society, a male-dominated society, but the village boys who grew up in small mud houses, you know, living a medieval life, getting to the point where they were literate enough to come to a school in the town, and then many of them going off to universities. And I could just see it happening. Without the literacy corps, it would not have happened. I still know a fair, I know a fair number of people who grew up in circumstances like that and are now highly educated.
I was also very, very impressed. I'm normally a cynic, but I was highly impressed by the college I was teaching in. The students, all of whom had been former teachers, were very committed, very dedicated, and becoming more and more politically committed too. And the staff was also excellent. It was a small college, but had extremely good potential.
What kind of, you said you had some contact with other Peace Corps volunteers in Iran.
For sure, yeah.
What kind of work were they doing?
A variety of things. We had, in the area that I was in, people were basically teaching. There were a whole series of towns, and we would meet, you know, once every month, once every 2 months. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of volunteers that I would see more frequently, about once every 2 weeks or so. But teaching, a lot of agriculture work. I had one friend who was assigned to the Department of the Environment, and he was basically involved in not animal husbandry, but he was involved in the park system and the maintenance of the rare animals that the Iranians were trying to bring back. They were doing quite a bit of work with bringing back the lions that were native to Iran, with other animals, with certain types of deer, certain types of sheep. And they were in park preserves. So one friend who was very much involved in that, he was a roommate of mine too for about a year and a half, 2 years. Sorry. People involved in agriculture. We had, remember, one person who played in the symphony, but it was a variety of work: agriculture, education, some assignments in, you know, to ministries, a variety of things like that.
How much contact, if any, did you have with the U.S. Embassy, Tehran or embassy officials?
In my first year when I was in Songor, no contact at all. I used to go into Tehran about once every 2 or 3 months. I'd go to the Peace Corps office. In my second 2 years, because I was living part-time in Tehran, with embassy officials per se, no contact whatsoever, but we were allowed to use the embassy restaurant. And I would go there perhaps once a month for a cheeseburger or a hamburger and a milkshake, because they would use beef. Whereas the hamburgers in Tehran were basically at that point lamb. One had to escape lamb once in a while. But with embassy officials, nothing. I think I met one or two at a Thanksgiving party once, and that was about it. I got a Christmas card from the ambassador once, too. But contact per se, nothing.
What kind of views about U.S. policy towards Iran did you pick up while you were in the Peace Corps? Did you form any views of Americans rolling around, or are you a policy generally towards the country?
Not really. The political emphasis at that time was all on Vietnam. When volunteers got together, we rarely discussed the embassy. I mean, it wasn't a factor for us. We had contact with the Peace Corps staff, of course, quite a bit, visits and other things. But the embassy, the American presence there was, basically, I didn't know very much about it. I didn't realize at the time that there were American team houses, for example, military missions scattered all around the country. I had no contact with them. The embassy, I would only go into the cafeteria, and I guess, or to the restaurant. If I had any opinion, I guess it was one of slight disdain for the embassy people. If you went into the embassy restaurant, you would see all the wives with varnished hair. And they all just looked sort of silly and alien. They had no effect on my life. And American policy towards Iran? Well, I was always accused of being this, not always, but once in a while somebody would tell me that I worked for the CIA, and I would deny it.
So you're in the Peace Corps period.
In the Peace Corps period.
Yeah, yeah.
But somewhat to my embarrassment now, I didn't really have a good idea at all of the American role in Iran at the time. Books about it were not available in Iran, at least not to me. And I was living such a totally Persian life that it just didn't come up.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned some of the political problems students were having from your own first-hand perspective, first-hand view. What kind of attitude did you yourself form about the Shah and his regime? Did you throw the same criticism the students did? Or,
I think, yeah, one of dislike.
Yeah.
Dislike of Savak, because I could see what was happening. But on the other hand, an appreciation for some of the things that were happening, too. Without a strong central government, the college I was teaching at would never have been established. It was a good school. I could see the effects of the Literacy Corps. I knew something about the way land had been broken up, the big estates passed down to villagers. I liked that. I could see other things that the government was doing that I appreciated.
Did land reform have a more positive impact in the Pabazar area than it did in Sangor?
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
The problem with land reform was that when the estates were broken up, the villagers who got parcels of land weren't really prepared to market what they produced. You know, it's fine to tell someone that these hectares are now his, but it became a little bit difficult too. I mean, they didn't have access, in many cases, to machinery. The level of agriculture, at least in the Songor area, was very primitive. I helped a villager once plow a field using an ox and a wooden plow. This was the level of agriculture in the area. It was still, you know, using oxen and wooden plows, you know, I mean wooden yokes on the plow, on the oxen. It was not an area that was being taken care of or being heavily invested in. It had always been remote. It was still remote. Remote part of the country. And agriculture was the mainstay, but it was a very primitive mainstay. When oil money started to come into Iran and the massive construction projects began all around the country, a lot of village men simply left the villages. They would leave their wives and kids in the villages, and they would go off to Tehran to work, to Abadan, to the oil fields, that area, to work in construction. And they'd come back to their villages for 1 or 2 months a year on vacation, perhaps to help with the spring plowing or the harvest. But basically, they were moving out. I tracked a couple of village families like that, watching what was happening to them. That was the basic scenario.
This is already happening when you were in Mamazar, this development. But this oil boom is really taking off.
It's starting then,
yeah.
But when I went back in 77, I could see the effects of it. Because I went back and revisited some of those remote villages near Songor. And there had been changes.
When did you leave Iran in 73? Was it What did you leave?
What month?
Sorry.
Roughly August, September. I spent a couple of weeks traveling around Iran, went back to the Kurdish area, and then hitchhiked to Turkey. Spent about 3 weeks in Turkey, got back to the States in, I believe, September, late September.
You left the Peace Corps at this point?
Right? Yeah.
You sort of dealt with this in some respects, but when you left the country in 73, what was your perspective on the value of the Peace Corps' work?
Very high.
Yeah.
Very high.
Yeah.
But, you know, not so much, well, there are two aspects to that. I could see, you know, with my own eyes, students who I knew, whom I had helped out in high school, who were already entering the university. I kept meeting teachers, or, you know, my students at the college, who had had Peace Corps volunteers as their English teachers in years past. So I could see that sort of effect going on. The real transformation, or the real effect of the Peace Corps, was not on the country of Iran, it was on the Peace Corps volunteers. Who, basically, no one is familiar with Iran before you get there. You can't be. But there were a large number of volunteers who spent two or three very productive, very good years at an early time in their lives in Iran. And I could see the effect it was having on them as people. I think that's the main reason the Peace Corps was set up. So I still believe in that very much. I'm never sure. I'm not sure how much it really helped the countries we're assigned to. But I've seen it as having it. It's having had a tremendous effect on the volunteers themselves. It builds an openness in them, or it opens them up to receive the concepts of foreign languages, foreign cultures, friendships, relationships. Things that if you go to a country only with an embassy, you can never have.
That's interesting. What was your next step? After you left the Peace Corps?
I had taken the examination, written examination for the State Department in 1972, December. Don't forget that I had a degree from the Foreign Service School at Georgetown. So it was sort of a natural next step. I had also applied at the same time to a couple of universities in the United States. Expecting, I wanted to come back and do a master's program or a doctoral program in Middle Eastern Studies. At this point, I had good Turkish, good Persian. And I was interested in continuing with that. But I took the examination in December of 72, learned about 2 months later that I had passed that, and said that I wanted to take the oral exam when I got back to the United States in late 73, which was fine. I passed the oral exam and was told immediately at that point in 73, they would tell you that very day if you had passed or not. I was told that same day that, you know, I had passed the oral exam. I took it in, I think, October of 73. And I was told that it was just a matter of getting a security clearance, which would take a couple of months, and being called up for an available class. And the estimate was given to 5 or 6 months, which was fine. I wanted to go overseas and I wanted to live well overseas. I had lived 4 for 5 years. I basically enjoyed being overseas. For the very first day when I got off the plane in Ankara, Turkey, I loved it. I felt very much at home and constantly stimulated by it. I just wanted to continue that, but not at $50 a month. Not having to hand wash, you know, clothes in a tub and things like that.
So your first assignment, the Foreign Service was in Ankara, Turkey.
The letter for the Foreign Service asking me to come to class or to join one of the classes came the same week as the acceptances to all the graduate schools. Of the graduate schools, one was prepared to offer me a fellowship. But I then sat down and did some thinking about finances and decided basically that going into the Foreign Service immediately, I would be getting paid to do what I would have to pay for if I went to graduate school. I'd also realize that because I had 5 years of work experience, I'd be entering the Foreign Service at as high a step as someone with a doctoral degree.
What was that, that kind of GS-12 or?
I'm not even sure. It wasn't a GS rating. It was FSO-7. 8 was the lowest. I was coming in as a 7. But it was the same that somebody with a doctoral degree in Middle Eastern Affairs would have been coming in as. I decided that I'd rather get back to the Middle East or somewhere and get paid for what I was doing instead of paying for it. I hadn't, you have to remember that at this point I was already, 26, 27 years old. And when I thought about going off to graduate school, spending another 3 years, it would have taken me to age 30, never having worked at a real salary. It was getting a little bit late. I also knew that in the State Department I could probably leave for a year or two later and get another degree, which I did eventually, and have someone else take care of the finances for it.
Okay. Well, how are we for time?
Say another 5 minutes or so.
Okay. You said you went to Turkey first at the Foreign Service?
I had 2 months, 1 month of orientation here in Washington, another month of consular training, and I was sent off to Turkey in the summer of 1974. Spent 2 years in Turkey until 76. In 76, I volunteered to go to Beirut. At that point, the embassy was being staffed only by volunteers. Before I could get there, while my household effects were en route to storage and my air freight was en route to Beirut, the consular section to which I'd been assigned was closed down in Beirut. My assignment was canceled to Beirut. Instead, I was sent to Damascus on a temporary assignment for 6 months to fill in the consular section. And from there, I was reassigned with a follow-up assignment starting in March of 77 to Tehran.
Now, what kind of work did you do in Turkey?
In Turkey, I was assigned originally to be the vice consul in the consular section, with work also in the political section as a junior political officer. When I got there, I discovered that this was on paper only, that what they really wanted was somebody to be a junior political officer full time, with, if he had to, go into the consular section. That had not been explained to me, perhaps on purpose, I'm not sure why, in Washington. But at any rate, just a few weeks after I got there, the ambassador's staff aide had to leave very suddenly for a family emergency. I was called up to be staff aide to the ambassador for 2 weeks until he got back. At the end of the 2 weeks, the ambassador decided that he was going to rotate his former staff aide into a political job. He gave him my old job in the political section, and I was staff aide for the next year to the ambassador.
Who was that?
William B. McCumber. Political appointee with a long service in the Foreign Service. He'd been a political appointee for 16, 17 years at that point.
He'd been an aide before, hadn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
I think he directed aid for a while.
Yes, yeah. I believe he did. He was also Assistant Secretary for Congressional Relations or Administration here. He had also been ambassador to Georgia. You're a good ambassador.
You worked as assistant.
I was a staff aide for a year. At the end of the year, there was another rotation, and I went down to the GSO section, General Services, and was in charge of the office that handled customs transportation. Customs in the sense of incoming, outgoing pouches, household effects shipments, telephone operators, and all the drivers of the embassy. Very good job, too. I had almost forgotten my Turkish in the staff aid job because I never had time to use it. I was dealing only with Americans and with Turks who spoke excellent English, and I had no time for any other life. It was a job where I'd get into the office at 7:30 and I would leave at 7:30 or 8 o'clock at night with no weekends.
Were you in Turkey already when they took centuries to Cyprus?
That was happening exactly at that point. The war was going on when I arrived in Turkey.
that take a lot of your time. The U.S. military bases were terminated at that point, I think, or later on?
No, not in Turkey.
Oh.
They're still there.
What do we, U.S. cut off aid, though, temporarily?
We cut off shipments of arms to Turkey, military supplies. I was there for that whole period, yes.
I thought some use of the military installations was cut off for a while.
No, the bases there are NATO bases, so they weren't really affected.
Oh, okay.
Although the military relationship certainly did suffer quite a bit.
Uh-huh. Did you do a lot of work around the Cyprus issue? Did that take a lot of your time? Or?
My job, the job of a staff aide at that point, was basically that of an advanced secretary.
Uh-huh.
You know, carrying out the ambassador's instructions, making sure he got his reading, going through his reading, appointments, planning trips for him, things of that sort. It was not really all that substantive. And I was also filling in the consular section whenever the consul went on leave. By the second year, I was doing a little bit more consular work, but basically the general services work.
Mm-hmm.
And working totally with Turks, many of whom spoke no English, or preferred not to speak English, so we spoke Turkish. And that's when my Turkish improved quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Should we start now?
Yeah,
okay, fine.